From WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, this is Lake Effect. I'm Stephanie Lecce. Today on the program, a Milwaukee area organization helps people get access to car loans through financial education.
It is such an awesome, powerful, palpable experience to watch somebody go from, I have no idea where my money is going, and look at it on paper after a week and go, oh my goodness, I can't believe where my money is going. The program is powerful that way.
We meet two people who have gotten their cars through Ways to Work. Then we mark the hallowed holiday of Festivus with a Milwaukee restaurant that takes it seriously, somewhat. And for the other holidays, the Master Singers of Milwaukee collaborate with the Milwaukee High School of the Arts.
They're exciting. Their energy is very contagious. I really enjoy working with his age group, and it's fun to see their aspirations and their visions.
Lake Effect comes your way next after news from NPR and Milwaukee Public Radio. This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Stephanie Lecce. Thanks so much for tuning in today. As the Milwaukee County Board debates who will run the city's public transit system in the future, many Milwaukee bus riders still complain the system doesn't meet their needs. But a car remains out of reach for many residents. The Milwaukee-based organization Ways to Work has been trying to address this issue in communities across the country. It offers financial counseling and access to affordable loans to help people buy their own vehicles. Since July, the YWCA Southeast Wisconsin has served as one of the local providers of the program. We'll hear from two people who went through this Ways to Work program later in the show. But first, I'll talk with Jennifer DeMont-Millen. She's the chief program officer at the YWCA. We met at their offices on the border of the Brewers Hill and Halliard Park neighborhoods, and she told me more about why such a program is needed.
One of the concerns that many of the people we serve encounter on a daily basis is transportation, how to get to where they need to get to the next stage in life. And as we know, bus lines are limited at best, and our families often experience circumstances that require them to take multiple buses. I always say to people, you know, it's an interesting experiment to set your keys aside for a week. And in doing so, do all those things you normally do and see how much additional time it takes you if you don't have your own transportation. It's something that many people don't think about, but once you really stop and you explore that idea in your head a bit, you go, wow, I am blessed to have a vehicle. I am lucky to have a car. Car makes my life easier, and that's true for our families.
So tell us about how the program actually works. I mean, what are the criteria for candidates for the program, and how do you administer it here?
This program is about more than cars. This program truly is about financial competency and confidence. And so in accessing the program, a person would first attend a financial education session. And in financial education, our program manager and often bank representatives who volunteer for the program go through a variety of different areas, including credit, including being banked. You know, what does it mean to have a checking and savings account? Including learning the things about balancing, you know, checking and savings accounts. And we also take time and talk about predatory lending, which is a huge problem in our community and one that Ways to Work works actively to address. So once people attend that financial education, then they determine, is this a program for me? And if it is a program for them and they want to apply, they then take that application, fill out those application materials, and then follow that up with a one-on-one budgeting session with our program manager, where their individual circumstances carefully looked at and considered, and we talk about how are you spending your money and ask people to track how they're spending their money and come back and meet with us and talk about that. It is such an awesome, powerful, palpable experience to watch somebody go from, I have no idea where my money is going, and look at it on paper after a week and go, oh my goodness, I can't believe where my money is going. The program is powerful that way. And so once that process then happens, then we move forward to moving into the actual loan process. We have an interesting situation with Ways to Work in that the YWCA Southeast Wisconsin, nor Ways to Work itself, we do not make the decisions on the loans. Those decisions are made by a volunteer loan committee, and that loan committee is staffed by bank volunteers, volunteers from insurance agencies, volunteers from nonprofits, volunteers from a variety of sectors who are charged with reviewing candidates not for their creditworthiness, but for what they've demonstrated in their character in terms of trying to address some of those credit issues that make them eligible for the program. We present loans and we provide information, about the candidates. The candidate themselves writes a letter to the loan committee about why they need this loan. So it's a moving experience also for those people who are volunteering in that capacity.
What are some of the reasons why the candidates say they need the loans for their vehicles?
Well, in many cases, our candidates, one of the requirements for this program is that you have to be employed minimally 3 months and have a steady work situation. And many of our candidates are in situations where they have the job, but the lack of reliable transportation is preventing them from moving forward in the job or from being the most reliable and dependable employee that people want to be. And so we have situations where, schedules are limited for them. Maybe you can make extra money working a different shift, but you can't get to the employer on those off hours, Sometimes people's work hours are such that they wind up waiting around for a bus for 45 minutes every day waiting to access that next bus. And you think about that time over the course of a week and where that time could be spent with children working on homework or, even getting things done like laundry. This is a program that provides people with access to better live their lives, and that's powerful.
So once the loan committee approves the loan, what happens next? How do you guide the candidates to use that money toward a responsible purchase?
Yes. The car is not actually identified until after the loan committee approves the individual for the loan and then starts that process of finding the vehicle. We have a couple of rules. There are a few vehicles that we say no to based on consumer reports. We educate, our borrowers about why we make those decisions. But we also have rules about 100,000 miles on the car or less. We have no requirement of any dealership that they work with, but we have had good experiences with some dealerships who have been very responsive, have even offered, ongoing oil changes to some of our borrowers. And so we look for those good relationships and we say, we've had good experience with them. You may want to check them out and help guide people toward car dealers who offer warranties rather than, maybe the corner lot who wants to get that car off, the lot as quickly as possible and doesn't want to hear from the person again. We are looking to develop our relationships with dealers so that we can better support our borrowers.
You said before that this program is really about so much more than just a car. How does successfully going through this program, being in the process of paying off this loan, affect the candidates?
One of the great things about this program is that this doesn't end when the loan is received or when the car is driven off the lot. This is a case management program. This is a program that somebody gets the car and begins their repayment process. And all throughout that repayment process, which typically is 24 to 36 months, they are in constant contact with our program manager. When something comes up, they're calling and saying, hey, something came up this month, We are creating an environment where the rapport is there, that people aren't afraid to say, oh, something's come up. Help me. Can you help me figure out how to manage this? That relationship piece is so key because it allows us throughout the process of repayment to help people continue to build their financial literacy. And plus, successful repayment of this loan is actually reported to the credit bureaus. We report. So we are an opportunity for our borrowers to actually increase their credit rating through successful repayment of our loan.
What kind of impact does that have in the long term for the participants in this program, especially for those who are coming in who maybe just don't have the credit history or have made some mistakes in the past or had some unfortunate situations where their credit has taken a beating? What does this do for them?
Credit can be challenging and confusing. You get your credit report, you look at it, you go, what does this even mean? By taking out that confusion, by sitting down and step-by-step reviewing that, we're giving people the opportunity to take charge of their financial life. And many times we see in people with credit challenges and that, there's a pattern of spending there that doesn't support them getting ahead financially. One of the things that we see is once people understand how their credit works, how savings works, when we talk about interest and the benefit of interest in that, people become as excited about saving as they do about spending. And that's one of the neat things about this program. It's giving people the information that they need to say, I'm not afraid of this anymore. Oh, I can do this. I had no idea I could do this. I can do this. And you know what? It's not going to stop with this car. It's going to start with this car. I'm going to pay this off. And you know what? I hear there are home ownership programs. It's about saying, wow, all these things I thought were out of my reach, maybe they're not.
What is the rate of successful completion of repaying the loans?
Well, we're a new provider, obviously, but if we look at ways to work system-wide across the country, it's about a 90-some percent repayment rate. I believe defaults are under 10%. So when you look at that as it compares with traditional lending, it's a very, very high success rate. You know, people want to be successful. People want to work. They want to support their families. They want to do the things that all of us want. People want to get ahead. And I think sometimes when we think about people with challenged credit, we forget that their goals and their goals for themselves and their family are what any of us want for our families. And we're so happy to be part of facilitating that movement toward, oh, wow, I can do this.
How does the Ways to Work program fit in with the broader YWCA mission?
You know, the YWCA operates programming around economic empowerment, workforce development, and racial justice. And, you know, when we look at our program areas, this program is vitally important. This program's about access. And really, all of our programming is about access, giving people a chance to connect to mainstream, to connect to opportunity, to get themselves and their families ahead. And it gives us a unique opportunity to do that. A car is a powerful, powerful tool.
How many participants have you had apply to the program?
We've had over 160 people complete that financial education piece. And from that, you know, about half of that amount has taken the application for the loan and has determined that they want to move forward. To date, right now, we've got 5 loans approved, but we've got many, many more in the pipeline. You know, this isn't an immediate kind of program where you come in one day and by the end of the week you have the loan. All that budgeting work, all that front-end piece needs to happen in advance of that. Our program manager, Shelby, invests a lot of time in each individual so that we know that when their loan is approved, they feel confident in their ability to repay it. That's vitally important to us. We want to get people into loans that they feel good about.
How is the program funded?
You know, this program is sort of funded in two ways. When the Ways to Work National Office, which coincidentally is headquartered here in Milwaukee, they secure the loan capital for the program. And so that is through their relationships that the loan capital is secured. As an organization, the YWCA Southeast Wisconsin is responsible for raising the funds for program operations. And that includes, you know, the staff time and all the expenses that go into operating the program. Ways to Work is a community development financial institution, a CDFI, and is certified by the U.S. Treasury. And so that means that banks and insurance companies who are looking for Community Reinvestment Act credits as they look to further their own businesses, their involvement in Ways to Work, both financially supporting program operations as well as volunteering and working with our borrowers in financial education or in helping them access financial products, allows those banks and insurance companies access to those Community Reinvestment Act credits. It is a very, very unique program in that way and allows us to give our borrowers access to more services. So that's very exciting for us.
The thing that strikes me about this program is it is so much about relationships and about really getting to know the person. And that seems rare when you're dealing with anything to do with loans and financial institutions these days.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is relationship lending. It is. This is, for us, every person that gets a loan, you know, we know that we will minimally have, you know, a 2 to 3 year relationship, but I suspect that some of these relationships will be very long term. We have a lot of programs to offer at the YWCA Southeast Wisconsin to move families forward. Ways to Work is one of them, but we also help to connect people to all the other things that we're doing. So yes, we are very hopeful for long-term relationships with our borrowers.
As you continue to roll this program out here in the Milwaukee area, what impact do you see right now, and what do you hope to see in the future?
I hope to see a community that is less plagued by access issues. I hope to see a community that is more just through this program, that gives people an opportunity to do what they dream of doing without the limitation of something as simple as an affordable car loan. You know, one of the things I don't think many people in the mainstream financial community realize is that for folks with challenged credit or non-existent credit, interest rates in the 20, 30, even 40% range are very, very common. And so when you look at the cost of a loan in that regard, the repayment of the loan itself in that becomes, you know, a heavy, heavy burden that doesn't allow, you know, that movement forward. Waste work is a loan. It does have an 8% interest rate associated with it. This is not a grant. It is not an interest-free loan. It is a loan with an interest rate. So it is a way, too, that people are participating in a mainstream financial product.
Well, Jennifer DeMont-Millen, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having us. We're excited to share.
Jennifer DeMont-Millen is the Chief Program Officer at YWCA Southeast Wisconsin. She told us about the YWCA's efforts as a Ways to Work provider in Milwaukee County. Coming up, we hear from two Wisconsinites who have gotten their cars through the Ways to Work program. We'll meet them when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio. Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Stephanie Lecce. Before the break, we heard about the Ways to Work program, which helps people clear financial hurdles and get car loans, which in turn gets them a vehicle that gets them to their jobs. Tori Johnson is from Milwaukee and Miranda Vogelman is from Oak Creek, and both went through the Ways to Work program. I met with them at the YWCA Southeast Wisconsin offices in Milwaukee, and they explained how they connected up with the program there. Tori begins.
Well, I heard about Ways to Work because I work in the community, and actually I'd recommend like 6 or 7 other people to Ways to Work. And then I decided when my car kept breaking down, my car, and I said, well, I need to go to Ways to Work.
Miranda, what about you?
My daughter's grandmother actually went through Ways to Work and recommended me to go.
Well, give me a sense of where you were at when you realized you might need the services of Ways to Work and what this loan for your car would be able to do to help you.
Well, with me, it was like I wanted the car that was reliable, that's going to start up every day and go. And I also knew that my credit wasn't all as great as everybody else's, so that I knew that here at YWCA that you get another chance. So they're going to look at it and they're going to go over it, but then they might give you that chance to say, okay, we're going to work with you and you could get your car and, you know, work out your credit at the same time.
Traditional lending options weren't available to you.
The ones that probably were, no, they wasn't. And the ones that were was, you know, I wasn't going to be able to afford that no way. So it was going to get me caught up in the trap again.
The trap, what do you mean by that?
The trap was like I called one car place. They said, you've been approved for $20,000. I do not need no $20,000 loan. If I would have bought a car from them, if they would have gave me $16,000, I probably would have been owing like $30,000 back.
Miranda, what about you?
I'm a young parent. I have a 2-year-old daughter. I work and I go to college. I didn't have a car, relied on my mom's. And after a while, it was hard getting her to daycare and me getting to school. And when her grandma told me about Ways to Work, it was an awesome opportunity. Me also being young, I don't have much credit and not that great a credit. So they gave me the second chance to build my credit and to start my future.
Well, tell me about some of the criteria that you had to meet in order to participate in this program.
You have to have a child or a dependent. You have to have been working for 6 months with the same job.
You had to be willing to pay the loan back. right. So I'm on the same thing. You got to have a dependent child. You have to have at least 6 months at your employment, and you got to be willing to pay the loan back.
You both used the same phrase, a second chance. What do you mean when you say that? How does this program give you a second chance?
Well, I don't know. I might say mine would be the first chance because it's like that was the first time I ever walked on the car lot and bought a car. It was the first time that I'm going to be paying a car note. So it's like, but it's a second chance in having something and working for it and honestly doing it, you know. So it's like, oh, the second chance would be me now is that I pay my We Energy bill when I wouldn't pay it last time. So it's a second chance to actually be responsible and do it the right way.
It's the second chance to have something that you've worked for, and they also work with you on the payments, on your income. They break it down to what you make and how much you should save. They organize everything. It's an awesome program.
Did you feel like you were kind of getting a financial economic education as you were going through this program?
Yeah, they broke it down to what I made a month, how much I was spending a month, and what I was spending my money on. And at the end, I realized I was spending more money than what I actually had, and I should start saving so that in the future I can buy the house, I can make this great life of myself. It was amazing.
And with me, it was eye-opening because I was like, wow, I'm eating too much Kentucky Fried Chicken. And you know, so when Shelby broke it down to me, I did see that I can leave that alone, put more food in the refrigerator. Because she said, I can't believe you ain't spending that much money on groceries. I believe it, but I will be now because I need that other money to go for my car. But it was like it showed me also that I could step back and pay off the other people that I owe and still have money.
So this was about more than just the car and more than just that loan.
Yeah, it's more than the car because now once I do the car, I'm going for the house. And for me to go to the house, I got to go back to that piece of paper that she gave me to say who I owe and how I owe it and how can I go about adjusting my lifestyle was like more important than the car. And that what I took away from it. The car is beautiful, but it's just that I know now that I see it because at first I never seen it in my face. You know, people be calling me and I be ducking, but you know what I'm saying? But it, when you see it in your face, she showed me that you could actually do it. And that was the first time that I sat there and seen that I could actually do it on paper.
Why is having this car so important for you to be able to take the next step forward in your life?
Well, for me being young, the car makes it easier for me to work a full-time job, for me to still go to school full-time and to graduate college. Also, it helps me. It's something reliable and safe for me and my daughter. I don't have to worry about my car breaking down at every red light, or I don't have to worry about how my daughter is getting here or how we're getting there, because now we have that reliable transport, and I feel safe getting her to school and getting me to school and to work and home.
And that's, you know, that's pretty much like the same, except I'm not that young. But and being at my age, it is feel good to go outside. And, you know, when I first got in the car, I pumped the gas. The man was like, oh, you ain't got to pump the gas because, you know, my old cars, you pump the gas. So it was, and then it's like a thing that make you feel good. So when you pull up in the car lot, you go to work, everybody be waving at you, you know, a different way. People walk around you, even your kids say, I'm proud of you, Dad, you know what I'm saying, because they never thought you'd ever do it, you know what I'm saying. So that's what make me feel good, and then it's uplifting. So, you know, and it is something to know that I'm going to go outside and start the car. So that just make you feel good. When you drive down the street, you know, yeah, they say, tip the window. I want people to see me.
One of the things I have to ask, do you feel like you would have learned these budgeting tactics or how to build your credit without this program? I mean, are those resources available elsewhere in the community?
I think the only other resource that I did go to that was similar, is just that Shelby brought it up a little higher, was the first-time home buyers program. But other than that, I don't think they just got a budget program like this out here that I ain't heard of it yet.
I've never ran into any other place that cared more about your budgeting and how you're going to do this. And someone that didn't push this loan on me, they made sure that I could pay it off, that it would work in what I was making. It wasn't them trying to sell anything. They worked with me and made sure that I was the right person for it.
Going forward with what you've learned from this program, with the credit you've been able to build or in the process of building, what do you hope to do next?
Well, my main goal is to pay off the car. And then the next one is to buy a home.
Me also, I want to pay off the car. I want to graduate college.
What do you feel like when you're driving around in your car today, going to work, going to school, taking your family around?
Well, I feel proud. I tell people how I got the car because it's a simple fact that I put in a process and I got approved. you know, and the lifestyle I used to live and where I come from, you know, I'm the site manager of this place right here. And I'll try to teach other younger people to go the straight route instead of going all the way around the way I had to go through it. So it's like, hey, guess what? Because, hey, you got a beautiful car. Guess I got it. You know, I applied for it. I applied for a loan. I actually got it. You know what I'm saying? When if I was been living the way I was living in the past, you wouldn't have gave me nothing.
I'm really proud of myself. I know that I worked hard for that car, that I am working hard still for this car, and it's something that I did on my own. I didn't ask my mom for help. I didn't. Ways to Work helped me, but I didn't have to rely on my mom or someone else to help me. And I do. I recommend the company to a lot of my friends. It's amazing. It's a great feeling inside.
Well, Miranda and Tori, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tori Johnson of Milwaukee and Miranda Vogelman of Oak Creek both obtained their cars thanks to car loans they received through the Ways to Work program. We spoke at the YWCA Southeast Wisconsin offices in Milwaukee, where the program is administered. Coming up, we go from access to cars to access to good food. That's when Lake Effect continues on WUWM. More of Lake Effect Now, I'm Stephanie Lecce. In 2011, Growing Power's Will Allen had this to say about Lake Effect contributor Kyle Cherik. Eating food is what we all have in common. It's important that everyone has access to the same good food regardless of their economic standing. This is about social justice. Kyle gets this. It was a very nice thing to say, but 2 years later, Cherik isn't quite sure he did get it.
When Will Allen gave me that quote, I was both humbled and reaffirmed. As the host of a television show called Wisconsin Foodie, which is in essence about where your food comes from, what higher compliment? Will and I had shot an early Wisconsin Foodie episode together, participated in a handful of like-minded forums and events, and in essence been reading out of the same playbook as far as food issues, sustainability, and urban agriculture. Will Allen is a stalwart pioneer and implementer of each of those precious concepts and has been living them for more than two decades. I was enlightened by them, and with the advent of the show, I had been living them in a no less important but smaller way, with a similar commitment to advocating the same mindset. Or so I thought. It's important that everyone has access to the same good food, the quote states. For 18 years, I was a resident of Walker's Point, one of Milwaukee's three original neighborhoods founded by George Walker in 1835. Just under one square mile, it's more than twice the size of the Third Ward, about the size of Shorewood, and home to 9,000 people. But here's the rub. Walker's Point, with the exception of one bodega, has no grocery store. Without second thought, I drove to the east side to shop at Outpost and Whole Foods. I fetched artisanal cheeses and breads and fish at the public market. I drove further into the south side to buy sausages exclusively at European Homemade Sausage. For the last 6 years, I had been walking lockstep with Will Allen and others, ardently promoting consciousness through food. But as the American discourse came to include terms like food desert, I had a dearth of consciousness that I was living in one. Near the end of 2012, while I still cluelessly drove across town for food, my neighborhood took a step to implement what Will Allen would call the same access to healthy food. The Walker's Point Association, in response to steady urging from the residents, started approaching developers and grocers to find a fit. A site fell into place at the corner of First and Greenfield. A developer stepped forward, as did a grocer. Swell, let's break ground and let the people buy vegetables. Not exactly. I may have been inured to the fact that I was living in a food desert, but once I realized that locusts and wild honey weren't going to cut it, I went evangelical. I wish I could say the same for the city, specifically Commissioner Marcoux. I am not here to opine about the inability of civic officials to grasp what is really germane to city residents. This program is only an hour long. But I do know this. Marcoux opposed a grocery store of any kind and instead championed light industrial and offices for the location, whose stars had seemingly aligned. Beyond that, suffice to say, I have been privy to more backward thinking, near subterfuge, and general urban planning cluelessness to fill the aisles of any idyllic farmer's market. What grates me is that, as a city, we have touted our urban ag sustainability card, held Will Allen up as a national hood ornament, promoted ourselves as a Rust Belt city that got enlightened, but we still eschew access to food where it's needed. The grocery may still happen, but residents of the city's food desert will have to wait for another year at the soonest, instead of shopping there this winter. In the days between the bounty of Thanksgiving and New Year's Eve, I have thought more than ever about where our food comes from in our home. The decisions we make for our cupboards and kitchens are not just determined by income and culinary acumen, but by access. Will's quote about me said, "It's important that everyone has access to the same good food. This is about social justice. Kyle gets this." Yes, Will, now I do. My holiday wish as a foodie is from my old neighborhood of Walker's Point. I wish that they are granted the same access, too.
Lake Effect contributor Kyle Cherik is host and producer of the public television show Wisconsin Foodie. He writes a regular column from Milwaukee Magazine's website. We're less than a week to Christmas, but the countdown is even shorter for that other commemoration first introduced in an episode of Seinfeld.
Kramer, I got your message. I haven't celebrated Festivus in years. What is your interest?
Well, just tell me everything, huh?
Many Christmases ago, I went to buy a doll for my son. I reached for the last one they had, but so did another man. As I rained blows upon him, I realized there had to be another way.
What happened to the doll?
It was destroyed. But out of that, a new holiday was born. A Festivus for the rest of us.
That must have been some kind of doll.
She was.
Festivus may have started out as a joke on a TV show based famously in New York, but it's become very much a Milwaukee celebration. Not only are official Festivus poles made by Milwaukee's own Wagner companies, one of which we might add adorns the Lake Effect bungalow, but there are several local observances. That includes the restaurant Quaker Steak and Lube in New Berlin, which is inviting patrons to participate in the holiday's traditions of the airing of grievances and feats of strength, while gazing adoringly at the Festivus pole. Scott Acker is the restaurant's owner and joins me by phone. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, for those listeners who maybe aren't familiar with Festivus, who maybe never watched Seinfeld and have missed this, what exactly is Festivus?
Well, Festivus was a tongue-in-cheek holiday kind of invented by George Costanza on the Seinfeld show. And he, instead of pulling out the Christmas tree or the menorah, decided to come out with a aluminum pole, and that was going to represent Festivus, a holiday for the rest of us. And a whole episode of Seinfeld was created around the Festivus pole and how you could air your grievances, no matter what they were, and celebrate feats of strength to see who wins Festivus. And so it's kind of a competition. It's kind of a funny tongue-in-cheek type celebration of the fun that's not had at holidays. And so that's where Festivus kind of came up.
Tell me about how Quaker Steak and Lube first decided it was going to put on its own Festivus celebration.
You know, there's just so many different things that people have going on this time of the year. And then, you know, everybody gets caught up in the holiday gift buying and going to parties and everything. And we just thought it would be kind of funny that closer to the holidays, what can we do that would be just fun? And we decided that the Festivus idea from Jerry Seinfeld's show was just a fun kind of way to just have fun on a night that's kind of, you know, kind of slow.
Festivus seems like it's kind of taken on a life of its own outside of this, you know, it's almost no longer a fictional holiday, even though it is a fictional holiday. People are actually celebrating it, and that includes Quaker Steak and Lube.
We've been doing this for, I believe it's our fourth or fifth year. But what we do is we follow the rules of the Festivus pole. It's an aluminum pole, and it has a set of rules, and it actually has a book. So there is a book, there's a set of rules, and this is sort of kind of becoming something, but we turn it into good. So you can come to Quaker Steak and Lube between 7 and 9 o'clock on the 23rd, because that's when Festivus is celebrated. You can fill out your grievance on a form. You pair up with your friends that may come there, and you arm wrestle to see who wins their grievance. And that turns into a little bit of a tournament, and you keep on airing your grievances, and you keep on arm wrestling with your friends until you win the poll. And we have some other prizes, and we try to make it fun. But the most important part of this event for Quaker Steak and Lube is that we've been raising, you get to air your grievances by donating food. And so in Middleton, Wisconsin, we're donating to the River Food Pantry. In Janesville, Wisconsin, our location there is donating to the Echo Food Pantry. And in New Berlin, we're donating to the New Berlin Food Pantry. About 75 to 100 pounds a year, each location has been able to donate. This year, we're hoping for 200. But that just makes it a little bit more, you know, a little bit more special. It's not just a, you know, drinking thing or who's got the biggest muscles or who has the biggest gripe with whoever or whatever. That doesn't really matter. Typically, my gripe is the weather. And right now, it's very appropriate. I mean, it's still really cold out.
What have been some of the best grievances aired that you've heard over the years?
Oh, when the whole Scott Walker thing was blowing up, there was a lot of that going on in Middleton. There's been grievances with coaches and teams and sports events and how things are handled in government up in Middleton and how different things have gone down in Milwaukee. There's just been simple ones, kids not keeping up with their room. The more creative, the better chances you have a chance to win.
Why do you think people are so attracted to come down and celebrate Festivus?
I think people want to come to Festivus because they, too, are kind of getting sick of being stuck in this buy stuff, run around, got to get the last-minute gift, got to do everything last minute in order to have basically a good time celebrating with friends and family. And I think that's why people, like, you know, they kind of come to this event and go, well, this is kind of different. It's kind of fun. It's in a, you know, non-confrontational setting. It's in public, basically. And it's a good way for people to meet. And if they bring a gift for each other, that's cool, too. But, you know, I think that's the reason not to have that is that's not gift-focused. It's anti-gift-focused. And I think that's a big thing.
For those who maybe want to carry on the tradition themselves in their own homes, what are some of the rules that they need to follow to celebrate a good Festivus?
There's no decorating the Festivus pole, for sure. There's no decorating. There can be no lights. There can be no anything stuck to the pole. There can be nothing like that. And there is no dancing on the pole. There's no sitting on the pole. There's no using the pole as a weapon. there's several very specific rules, and there is a rule book.
Well, Scott Acker, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Scott Acker is the owner of Quaker Steak and Lube in New Berlin, which is hosting its Festivus celebration next Monday, the traditional Festivus date. You'll find a link to more information at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. Coming up next, we hear about another holiday tradition courtesy of the Master Singers of Milwaukee. That's next on Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. You're listening to Lake Effect on WUWM. I'm Stephanie Lecce. Tis the season. Everywhere, from kindergarten concerts to those by the MSO, we are awash in holiday music. For those who love the beauty of the human voice raised in song, one upcoming concert celebrates Milwaukee's strong choral tradition. This Saturday evening, the Sharon Lynn Wilson Center in Brookfield presents a concert by both the Master Singers of Milwaukee and the Milwaukee High School of the Arts Concert Chorale. Both ensembles will perform separately before joining forces at the end of the program. Raymond Roberts is the chair of the music department at the High School of the Arts, and Dr. Eduardo Garcia Novelli is the conductor and music director of the Master Singers. They join Lake Effect's Bonnie North in the studio, and Garcia Novelli explains the structure of the Master Singers.
There's a group of singers that come from different walks of life, but many of them have had professional training. And they have been singing together for a long, long time. So they know each other really well, and they sound well each other. So that's a good thing.
What are some of the challenges that you find working with, I guess, a sort of a semi-professional group? I mean, certainly aspiring to the professional sound, but not having a full-time job to be able to do that.
Oh, I guess like any group, I think the biggest challenge is just to rehearse once a week. And that will be perhaps the biggest challenge, you know, to have to see them only once a week when you have something that you want to revisit, so on. You cannot do it the next day or the day after. It has to be done the next week. And it's that will be perhaps the only challenge that we have.
And Raymond, you are at the other end of the spectrum in that you're dealing with high school students and people at the very, very beginnings of their careers.
Yes, they're exciting. Their energy is very contagious. I really enjoy working with this age group, and it's fun to see their aspirations and their visions about what they could potentially do in music. And even if they don't pursue music vocationally, to see them start to see that there's a lifelong pursuit of keeping music in your life and how music can enrich your life throughout your entire life is a wonderful thing to see. And doing collaborations like this with Master Singers is a great way for my students to see people continuing to pursue their passion.
Even if it's not a career.
Absolutely.
Right. When you're working with student choral singers, what are some of the things that you have to focus on to get them to pay attention to and to start listening for?
I really focus primarily on the fundamentals of good, healthy singing. Once we've established that, I expose them to quality music from every time period, every style, every geographic location on the planet. And as is always the case, people respond to quality music. So there's nothing else to do after that. It's just to keep them engaged in making good music and being part of something excellent. We all want to be part of something excellent in our lives. And if you can find a passion and a vehicle for that, and singing seems to be that for most of my students, then we've already put them on a path towards success in whatever field they end up choosing to pursue.
Now, one of the things I find interesting for both groups, I would imagine, is that solo singing is so very different from choral singing. I mean, yes, the techniques in terms of producing a sound are the same, but it's a very different approach. And people who tend to be more soloists sometimes have to be reined in a little bit, you know, or to be taught to listen in a different sort of way. Do you find that true? And I'm opening up to both of you, not just for the young people, but for the people who have careers and are coming to Master Singers later.
Indeed, that's a big point. In fact, in Master Singers, I'm smiling because we have a number of wonderful, wonderful singers, and many of them have had a lot of training as soloists. So there you have it, a little bit of a challenge as well for us to get to that wonderful sound that is a communal sound, a sound for a group of individuals sounding together as opposed to a soloist. Something that, I don't know, it doesn't happen so much when you talk to instrumentalists, right? Because, I mean, when you play in an orchestra and versus playing a solo, I don't think there's so much of a difference there. But yes, we do have that, and it's sometimes it becomes a challenge. Yeah, I would say so.
Is that true for the high schoolers too?
Well, sure. I think maybe referring to your analogy with the instrumentalist, I think there's so much more variety of timbres in the human voice based on our composition biologically.
Yes.
That I think we probably have harder row to hoe with that specific situation. With my students, I really want them to find their maximum sound without sounding like a big individualistic solo singer. Because from my perspective, I'm really wanting them to explore and see, well, what are my possibilities? What does this body of mine sound like when I'm making music and when I'm singing? So once I get to that point, there's a little bit of refining and polishing through specific techniques and mostly listening. It's really about listening. What am I contributing as an individual singer to my section and to the entire choir? But am I bringing focus to myself rather than to the entire choir? So opening their ears is probably the biggest challenge.
I used to say that I'd like my singers to have ears that are bigger than their own bodies. You sing with your ears. I say that many times.
Now, master singers, how many in the chorus?
It's a group of around 30 members. Sometimes we have 32, sometimes
okay.
we have
28. So not huge numbers on a part.
No.
So you sing basically four parts, soprano, alto, tenor, bass,
yes.
more
mm-hmm.
or less. Is that true for the students as well, Raymond?
I have a larger ensemble this year. The advanced choir is about 80 students.
That's big.
It's big. And I've been doing quite a bit, six, seven, and eight part music this fall, particularly with the larger group. But it is, you know, the traditional soprano, alto, tenor, bass. But I've had the luxury of doing some divided choral music, which really adds a nice heft and nice harmonics.
And it must be fun for the kids.
They absolutely love it. I never tell them how hard it is, what they're doing, because then they stop trying. So I just present it to
them. Don't use words like polyphony. You
That's
know?
Right.
Yeah,
just present it to them, and they like how it sounds, and yeah. they do a good job.
So now with this concert, how are you working together, and are you also having pieces that will celebrate each individual group?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And one of the things that I mentioned at the beginning, you know, we rehearse only once a week, so it's perhaps challenging to do something together with Raymond's choir, but indeed we are. So we put together the concert in a way that they have a portion of the concert they'll do on their own, and it's certainly a really varied and rich program of music. And then we have our own portion as well, but in the end we'll come together and we have two numbers together. So that's this wonderful way to celebrate music and also to celebrate a composer who's having a 100th anniversary of his birth, which is Benjamin Britten, one of the biggest composers of all times, but particularly one of the biggest composers in the 20th century.
And for choral music. Wonderful.
A towering composer
for that. Mm. And I didn't realize it was his 100th anniversary.
1913
yeah.
and died in 1976. So yes, 100 years of his birth.
So what are you doing?
Together, we're doing at the very end a very simple but incredibly beautiful piece called A New Year Carol. Not many people know it, but it's a simple, sometimes people think that simple is easy and without worth or quality, and totally opposing and describing this piece. Simple as simplicity of means, but amazing, amazing composition. It's unison. That's why I say simple. It's just unison, but it's amazingly beautiful, A New Year Carol. On our end, the master singers, we're going to do A Boy Was Born. It is a long piece. It's a suite of six or seven movements, and it's a 32-minute piece. But we're only doing the first one, the theme, the main theme. That's only a two-minute-and-a-half piece. A piece that he wrote when he was only 19 years old, and he was studying at the Royal College of Music in London. But a seminal piece in choral music in general, but in his own production.
I'm fascinated by the unison one. That has to be probably the hardest thing on the program that you're doing.
Yes, it is. But it's as an incredible way to say goodbye in the concert. I'm sorry that I'm anticipating the end, but it's certainly not a bombastic way to say goodbye, but it's a very expressive and heartfelt way to end the concert.
So what are some of the pieces, other than the ones that we've mentioned, that your students are doing?
My students are doing three separate small sets on the concert, and we're going to open with some music from the African choral tradition. We're doing a folk carol from Namibia entitled Maguru. We're doing a South African Xhosa song called Lizela. And then crossing the pond, we're doing an African-American spiritual entitled Joshua Fit the Battle of Jericho. So that's a nice group of songs to start the concert with some energy and some rhythmic vitality. And then we have a set in the middle, tempo-wise. It kind of brings us into a more reflective mode. We're doing a jazzy arrangement of In the Bleak Midwinter, the Holst tune. And then the chorale will be performing one of Francis Poulenc's four motets for Christmas, this one being entitled Quem Vidis Dies, talking about the shepherds being told about the star to follow. And it's interesting. It's been my students' favorite piece of the year so far.
I was going to say interesting because Poulenc is not easy.
Not easy, but beauty is beauty. Quality is quality. And the students absolutely love kind of the simplicity of the chant, but then how there's some extra harmonic convergences and divergences in the piece.
It wouldn't be prolonged if it wasn't. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. So they've really, really enjoyed that piece.
So how is it performing out at the Sharon Lynn Wilson Center? Have the students been out there before?
This group of students has not. Last time I performed there was in 2008.
Okay, so this is going to be fun for them because that's a beautiful space to perform in.
It is beautiful. I had a concert last year, and I found it a wonderful, wonderful venue and great acoustics. And not a huge hall, but it's incredibly beautiful and very well set and sounds great.
Well, I want to thank both of you so much for coming in today and telling us about this concert. Eduardo and Raymond, thank you.
Thank you, Bonnie, for inviting us. It was a great time. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Dr. Eduardo Garcia Novelli is the conductor and music director of the Master Singers of Milwaukee, which is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year. Raymond Roberts is the chair of the music department at the Milwaukee High School of the Arts. They spoke with Bonnie North. The Master Singers and the High School of the Arts Concert Chorale will perform separately and together Saturday evening, beginning at 6 at the Sharon Lynn Wilson Center for the Arts in Brookfield. There's more information at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. I'm Stephanie Lecce. Great to have you listening today, and I really do hope you have a fantastic Festivus and can be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect from WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air is next.